Radio MD.
RadioMD.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Here's Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. We have a great show for you today. Yes, as the announcer alluded to, should you be taking Lipitor, Crestor, not just any statin, we want you to take those specific ones, atorvastatin and rosuvastatin, if you're going to take them. We'll come why and how it can prevent mental dysfunction as you get older. It's not just for your heart, but that heart data is that 50% of people from 49 on up should probably be taking it, and that probably means you, although it's only 50%. I think it's much greater than that. We'll come back to it. Another study this week, is Alzheimer's pathology different in different races? Yes is the answer. And how to prevent? Well, one of those things in how to prevent is that atorvastatin or rosuvastatin. How to cut children's screen time. Say no to yourself first. We'll talk about what the data are relating to that. We're also going to talk about unraveling the relationship between climate change and health. It's an important story, and reaction to smells may help diagnose autism. That's right. If you give early enough children smells that are specific, 81% of the time you can get autism diagnosed early, according to this study. And that can help get treatment early, which is very important. Can the White House convince Americans? Very important, because it leads to better outcome over the long term. Can the White House convince Americans that GMOs are safe? And we'll talk about why the White House would even think about that. It's thinking about that because there's a lot of apparent confusion about labeling. And I'll tell you some early data that may say that GMOs aren't as safe as we've thought they are. The FDA adds heart attack and stroke warnings to painkillers like naproxen, ibuprofen. What that means for you and what it means for your taking painkillers. And then, that is, you fall down or get a toothache or something, we want a painkiller, what should you be taking? The guest segment at the bottom of this hour is with Jack J. Wazen, W-A-Z-E-N. He's a physician, otolaryngologist, and neurotologist, whatever the heck that latter means. But essentially what it means is he works on dizziness and the causes of dizziness. He's at the Silverstein Institute and Florida Ear and Sinus Center in Sarasota, Florida. He specializes in treatment of acoustic neuromas, ear bone deterioration, and other conditions that affect hearing and balance. We're going to ask him about his book called Dizzy, what you need to know about managing and treating balance disorders and how you can prevent them. That is, can you prevent them with exercise, and what exercises should you and should I be doing? Yeah, we all should be doing something. So that's Are You Dizzy, Dr. J.J. Wazen. W-A-Z-E-N. The second hour, yeah, I know many of you don't get it. Some of you do get it, obviously, and you all can get it. That is, if your radio station doesn't carry it, you can get it by Tuesday of the week after the show is aired. We air live on Saturdays. You can get it Tuesday the week after at RadioMD.com. Pull it up in the podcast, and it's going to be a good second hour. The good, the bad, and the creamy, where newly banned trans fats still hide. Then we're going to talk with Gary Ginsberg, steaming up some arsenic in those clams, how you should protect yourself. Another hit for Roundup. Roundup, that pesticide, it kills butterflies. What's toxic, what's not? This Don Toledo sent in, but Gary Ginsberg is going to talk about hug a tree today to keep the MD away. And then growing fish oils without the fish. Well, guess what? Although that was a big story this week, you'd say, you got to be kidding, because fish don't make fish oils. What makes fish oils is the algae the fish eat, and they're now growing them in farms. Diabetes takes a toll on your brain and on my brain, and it's especially when the inflammation from red meat and yolks make brain, and yeah, pork is a red meat, makes brain dysfunction worse for diabetics and what you can do to protect yourself if you are a diabetic or even if you aren't a diabetic. And then what was disappointing news from Great Britain, and I think this is Great Britain and not the world, but it said that few obese people are able to reach a normal weight or keep lost pounds off. It really means that what the Cleveland Clinic has done with its employees and how it has successfully done it should be a model for a lot of places, because our staff, that is the Cleveland Clinic staff, has lost 0.5 BMI points a year for the last 5 years. What that means is they've lost, if you mean in about a pound and a half or 7.5 pounds on average for the average person, whereas in America the average person has gained about a pound a year. So this is really remarkable work at the Cleveland Clinic, but this story came from Great Britain showing, following a little over 1,200 men and 677 women. No, they actually followed, those are the numbers, the chance of keeping the weight off. This was a study of over 176,000 obese people from Great Britain. We got news for them on how to do it. Alaska governor to use executive authority to expand Medicaid. I was wondering how many states still aren't accepting the money to increase their citizens' care. I know that some of the red states don't, but I don't know how many of them don't. In Alaska, they get to cover 42,000 more people because of what they're independent. I didn't realize there were any governors that weren't Republicans or Democrats, but this is independent Governor Bill Walker has done this. We're also going to talk about Congress votes to extend a Medicare house call program, and probably the story that'll get most play that I didn't even tweet about is that sexual intercourse may be an effective way to clear distal ureteral stones. We'll talk about that in the second hour, probably. That is, if you have kidney stones, one of the best ways of getting rid of them is to have sex. And then one of the other things that is good, 7 of 10 people with heart problems regularly take aspirin. That's a good thing, but you really want it to be 10 out of 10. I don't know why it isn't 10 out of 10. It should be 10 out of 10. And we'll cover that story as well as one story that is a horrible part of the story. That is, casual smoking is increasing among American women. 27% of women are now smoking, much higher than you'd expect. But this was a large study that asked young women, that asked women between the ages of 18 and 25, if they had smoked part or all of a cigarette in the past 30 days. While heavy smoking is decreasing, 62% of women who were smoking, and that's 62% of the 27%, were very light smokers, but they were smoking. And this very light smoking still gives them a sizable risk. Those are the major stories we're going to talk about in this, You, the Owner Manual radio show today. If you have a story, you can email us that you want us to cover or talk about what the medical implications are. Just email us, because it's fun to get the stories that you send in. And in fact, Donald, I got to thank you. Don from Cleveland has sent in some stories. So has Mary, and so has a Jane. So thank you all. This is actually the first week I can remember having multiple people send in stories, and they're good stories, as I said. So thank you very much for doing it. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual radio show. And when we come back, we're going to go right to that story, that really important story about if you're over the age of 49, should you be taking a statin and a specific statin? And the answer is yes, atorvastatin or rosuvastatin. And I'll talk about why it's more than just heart disease prevention. We'll be right back on You, the Owner Manual radio show on Radio MD. Stay well. We'll be right back.
Mike.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Michael Roizen, MD. Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. I hope you can hear me well now. We had problems with connection. I also got the time wrong, not anything other than me getting the time wrong. So, but we're back here now, and I hope you know this is a live show, and we are live, but I don't have my email way to send information in, so you're going to have to call in if you want to talk, 844-305-7800, 844-305-7800. We have a whole bunch of topics, one of which is on beet juice, and we'll get to that in a second, why beet juice may be a great anti-aging remedy. We're also going to talk about something that bothered me with the ads. They said it's fine to have honey, and I guess it was molasses or something else because they got antioxidants in it. That's BS. Really bad news from that Academy of Nutrition or wherever it was from, that dietitian. It just doesn't make sense. You should not have anything with added sugars. That includes honey. That includes molasses. All of those things age you greatly. Don't do it. Don't listen to that ad. One of the things I'm happy about is some of the advertisers on our show are really spectacular. So there's the well, if you will, website for Evan Hotels, a great thing. And there's a snack company that advertises with us, wonderful. But that free message by the Academy of Nutrition or whoever it was, or even if it wasn't a free message, man, antioxidants don't kill free radicals. The antioxidants do bind them if they can get to them, but there are only three antioxidants inside your cell consistently, glutathione, catalase, and SOD, and those bind the antioxidants inside your cell, and that's where damage occurs. The ones free-floating in your blood, like you take from, if you will, food, that has a little effect because it affects the free radicals that get to float in the blood, but not many. And the key is in the cell, antioxidants. We're also going to talk about, it's official. Every state and territory is now gotten over 20% obese. And of course, the stroke zone, that is the zone of Texas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, I can't even see it, Iowa, Missouri, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, Georgia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Ohio, geez, all these states, Pennsylvania, Michigan even, all of these states are in what we call the orange. More than 30% of the population in these states are obese, and that's the Midwest. It has the highest population, followed by the South, and way below that is the Northeast and the West. So we're all overweight. And five states in the District of Columbia between 20 and less than 25%, but three states, Arkansas, Mississippi, and West Virginia, greater than 35%. So every state gained weight and waste in this last five-year period. We'll talk about the more starchy vegetables you eat, the more non-starchy vegetables you eat, that should read, the less weight gain in a large study. So if you're going to have vegetables, you want to eat the cruciferous ones, even romaine lettuce and other forms of lettuce, because those have much less of the sugar in them, much less starch. We're trying to avoid that. The heart effects of saturated fat are diminished if you, that is the adverse effects are diminished if you substitute healthy fats for the saturated fats. So what you want to do is substitute healthy fats. You don't want to, when you get rid of saturated fats, go to simple carbohydrates. Simple carbohydrates like those starchy vegetables, corn and potatoes, and like simple sugars and grains that are non-whole grains, quickly go to sugar. And those age you even when you cut down on your saturated fat. And by the way, saturated fat oven by itself reduces the barrier that you have between your blood and your brain. So we have a very important thing in our bodies, the blood-brain barrier, that stops bad things like inflammatory proteins from going from your blood into your brain. or immune cells that attack inflammatory proteins or waste, such as the amyloid and the tau protein, are really waste from your nerve cells. Well, if you let your immune cells go in and they start attacking that, they start gobbling up your nerves, and that's one of the causes, we think, of dementia. And what causes that breakdown in that barrier between your blood and your brain that allows those immune cells to come in to the brain? You got it. It's saturated fat. The heart effects of saturated fat depend on the overall diet. If you substitute sugar for the saturated fat, you don't get a benefit. Any other fat for the saturated fat, you get a tremendous benefit. Of course, that doesn't mean trans fat. It means monounsaturated or polyunsaturated. Another top story, dried plums to the diet. We call them prunes, reduce colon cancer risk. And that is an important benefit for you. How much does it take? It looks like it's just one a day does the trick. Of course, you can have more than that. So does 2 baby aspirin, so does calcium supplements, so does exercise, so do avoiding red and processed meats. So we know an awful lot about preventing colon cancer. And all of those things also seem to prevent breast cancer, with the exception of the calcium supplements, that is the 2 baby aspirin, the exercise, avoiding red and processed meats, decrease breast cancer. And if you add olive oil as a substitute oil and DHA omega-3 in walnuts, you get all of the things that are good for preventing breast cancer that we know about, those cruciferous vegetables, and you also prevent prostate cancer. So what is it that we know that seems to decrease breast cancer in randomized controlled trials and in a lot of epidemiologic trials? It is the cruciferous vegetables. It is more fruit, like the dried plums. It is 2 baby aspirin a day. It is doing physical activity. It's avoiding red and processed meats and other saturated fats and trans fats, and adding olive oil, DHA omega-3, and walnuts. So that's the summary of the data. What was new in the data is prunes this week. One prune a day decreases colon cancer risk substantially. When we break in a few minutes, coming back will be Dr. Robert J. Evans of Wake Forest University's Urology Department. Pain or urgency signal the need to pee for you. If they do, and it isn't an infection, maybe you've got what we call painful bladder syndrome or interstitial cystitis. And Dr. Evans has some new work for you and new treatments for you that may make a real big difference. So we'll talk to Dr. Evans right after the break from Wake Forest University's Urology Department. When we come back, if we have extra time, I want to talk about, and maybe we'll do it in the second hour. All of you know that we get this. Many of you know that we have this show on a second hour on most stations. If not, if your station doesn't get it or you have to go to another area, you can always archive it later in the day when you get a chance to get on your computer at RadioMD.com. RadioMD.com. Look for You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show in the archives. Many of you know that beet juice, or borscht, which was called in the old Russian scheme of things, and I guess it's a Ukrainian or Romanian dish. When I Google it, I find different sources. But borscht, which is beet juice, has now been studied in 3 very interesting studies to increase exercise stamina or tolerance. That is, you are able to go longer, about 11% longer in the maximum studies, and that is about a pint of beet juice every 6 hours, or 4 pints a day, or I guess that's a quart a day, and that increases your nitric oxide production, so increases arterial blood vessel receptivity. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD. We'll be right back with Dr. Robert J. Evans of Wake Forest University's Urology.
And
And now, back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, where, of course, the call letter signal means stay well. We at You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, let you take control of your genes so you can live at the highest possible level for the longest possible time. We have a great guest for you today. Dr. Robert J. Evans is an associate professor of urology at Wake Forest Baptist Health in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That's only about, I think it's about 30 miles from where my daughter teaches at Duke University. She teaches in the graduate and undergraduate chemistry program, so we won't go there. But it is close enough that I've been to Wake Forest, and it's a wonderful place. The urology department has lucky to have Dr. Robert J. Evans, who talks about a PBS, and it's not the PBS that's on TV or that signals the TV network. It's a PBS called Painful Bladder Syndrome. Dr. Evans, thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Now, tell us, what does PBS really mean, and what are the symptoms of it, and how do you differentiate it from just an ordinary infection?
Well, painful bladder syndrome is a more modern term that we use for an older term called interstitial cystitis. And patients who have interstitial cystitis or painful bladder syndrome suffer from urgency, frequency, and pain. And the feelings that they have are nearly identical to what one would have with a true urinary tract infection. So often they're misdiagnosed. The key difference is that when you check their urine, and especially if you run it in a culture, they don't grow any bacteria, because even though interstitial cystitis sounds like it might be infectious, it's really not an infectious disease at all. It's simply a situation where the bladder is extremely painful anytime urine gets in, and especially as the bladder fills. And that desire to get the bladder empty, to get that pain to go away, is why these patients urinate so frequently.
So one of the symptoms, and the symptoms are similar to infected bladder or an infected urine, is that they want to get the urine out of them as fast as possible, so they urinate many times. And is the urination itself painful?
Most patients actually don't think that the urination itself is painful, and in fact, they often will get some relief as the bladder empties. And that will last for a minute or two, and then as the urine starts to drip back into the bladder, their pain comes back. And they'll often describe it as feeling like they have razor blades in their bladder or ground glass or paper cuts or something very sharp and painful. This isn't a dull ache. It tends to be a very sharp, burning-type pain. And certainly, the frequency of urination these patients have can be tremendous. We have folks who urinate 50, 60, 70 times a day just trying to get some relief from this horrible pain.
So now you've cultured the urine. In other words, I assume it's more women than men. Is that correct?
You know, traditionally, it's always been felt to be a disease primarily of women. And when we looked at the statistics, it was always felt to be 9 women for every man. More recent studies have said it's more like 5-1. But one of the things we think does happen, we think a lot of men are misdiagnosed as having prostatitis or prostate problems. So it may not be as rare in men as we think, but certainly the percentage of patients who are diagnosed is majority female. So what will happen is when we get the urine cultured, if it comes back negative, sometimes these people then get misdiagnosed as having a bad case of overactive bladder. But I think the key thing is that overactive bladder is not painful. It's just frequency. So if there's pain and the urine is negative, we would recommend that everybody be evaluated and considered as that they might have interstitial cystitis, painful bladder syndrome.
So this takes a while to diagnose, but I saw from the statistics of the disease. We're talking, by the way, with Dr. Robert J. Evans, who's a physician in the urology department, an associate professor of urology at Wake Forest. And you can see him on the web at wakeforest.edu/urology. And we're talking about interstitial cystitis, or what used to be called interstitial cystitis. ICHealth.org is one of the websites for this specifically, or what is now called painful bladder syndrome. So they've got frequency, and they need to urinate frequently because the urine in the bladder, there's a desire, if you will, of the bladder to get rid of it because it's so painful. And they don't, and they have what we call a sterile urine or no bacteria in the urine. You then go to the step of how do you treat this then?
Well, you know, traditionally in the past, everybody would go to the operating room and undergo a cystoscopic examination where we look in their bladder and look for certain findings. But the current American Urologic Association guidelines feel that if patients have urgency, frequency, and pain of at least 6 months duration with no evidence of infection or other cause such as cancer in their bladder or something like that, then you can make the diagnosis strictly on clinical grounds. And we have certain questionnaires that we use to help us guide us. But once we find that, our goal is to try to get their pain under control as quickly as possible. And we will do that by initiating both medications by mouth and instillations of agents into the bladder, which will anesthetize the bladder and also try to recreate the abnormal bladder lining layer, which we think is where the problem comes from. The theory is that these folks, for unknown reasons, have a defect in the protective coating of their bladder, which is designed
to protect. So let's go over that. In your bladder, you have more than one layer of tissue.
Right.
And the coating, much like a coating in your stomach lining, is composed of what for the bladder normally?
Yeah, the bladder lining layer is a mucus-like layer that's secreted by that innermost layer of cells, which are called umbrella cells. Well, those cells secrete a mucus-like layer, which is called the GAG layer. That's a short term for glycosaminoglycan. But just think of it as mucus. It's like a thin mucus coating. But we know that urine is very acidic, and that acid in the urine really will burn it. Feels very toxic to tissue. So the protective coating, if it breaks down, the acid will then leak into the interstitial space, and that's where that interstitial cystitis comes from. And that's where the pain comes from, because acid's going where it's not supposed to go.
And now, so you try and get the acid out. What about just taking a lot of alkaline water, alkaline fluids? Will that help neutralize it or decrease it, or does that not work very well?
You know, it doesn't work consistently, but we do find that patients who keep well hydrated do a little bit better because a more dilute urine just feels a little less toxic to the bladder wall than very dark, concentrated urine. So one of the things we encourage people to do is actually increase their fluid intake because it'll decrease the pain a little bit, whereas they just often cut way back on their fluids because they're so tired of the frequency. But usually if we can get the pain better, the frequency will begin to decrease.
So it's a paradoxic decrease. We're going to talk about foods people should avoid and other treatments when we continue this with Dr. Robert J. Evans. He's a associate professor of urology at Wake Forest Baptist Hospital in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And his website is wakeforest.edu/urology. We've been talking about, and we will continue talking about, the treatment for painful bladder syndrome, which is a syndrome where your bladder doesn't like urine when it comes in contact with it, but doesn't have an acute infection. And we've learned so far that there are treatments that are oral and treatments that are direct installation of stuff into your bladder. We're going to continue about what you can do with changing food and changing water yourself and other things. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio M. We'll be right back.
And now, back to you, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, starring Dr. Michael Roizen.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, where, of course, the call letter signal means stay well. We at You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, let you take control of your genes so you can live at the highest possible level for the longest possible time. We have a great guest for you today. Dr. Robert J. Evans is an associate professor of urology at Wake Forest Baptist Health in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That's only about, I think it's about 30 miles from where my daughter teaches at Duke University. She teaches in the graduate and undergraduate chemistry program, so we won't go there. But it is close enough that I've been to Wake Forest, and it's a wonderful place. The urology department has lucky to have Dr. Robert J. Evans, who talks about a PBS, and it's not the PBS that's on TV or that signals the TV network. It's a PBS called Painful Bladder Syndrome. Dr. Evans, thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Now, tell us, what does PBS really mean, and what are the symptoms of it, and how do you differentiate it from just an ordinary infection?
Well, painful bladder syndrome is a more modern term that we use for an older term called interstitial cystitis. And patients who have interstitial cystitis or painful bladder syndrome suffer from urgency, frequency, and pain. And the feelings that they have are nearly identical to what one would have with a true urinary tract infection. So often they're misdiagnosed. The key difference is that when you check their urine, and especially if you run it in a culture, they don't grow any bacteria, because even though interstitial cystitis sounds like it might be infectious, it's really not an infectious disease at all. It's simply a situation where the bladder is extremely painful anytime urine gets in, and especially as the bladder fills. And that desire to get the bladder empty, to get that pain to go away, is why these patients urinate so frequently.
So one of the symptoms, and the symptoms are similar to infected bladder or an infected urine, is that they want to get the urine out of them as fast as possible, so they urinate many times. And is the urination itself painful?
Most patients actually don't think that the urination itself is painful, and in fact, they often will get some relief as the bladder empties. And that will last for a minute or two, and then as the urine starts to drip back into the bladder, their pain comes back. And they'll often describe it as feeling like they have razor blades in their bladder or ground glass or paper cuts or something very sharp and painful. This isn't a dull ache. It tends to be a very sharp, burning-type pain. And certainly, the frequency of urination these patients have can be tremendous. We have folks who urinate 50, 60, 70 times a day just trying to get some relief from this horrible pain.
So now you've cultured the urine. In other words, I assume it's more women than men. Is that correct?
You know, traditionally, it's always been felt to be a disease primarily of women. And when we looked at the statistics, it was always felt to be 9 women for every man. More recent studies have said it's more like 5-1. But one of the things we think does happen, we think a lot of men are misdiagnosed as having prostatitis or prostate problems. So it may not be as rare in men as we think, but certainly the percentage of patients who are diagnosed is majority female. So what will happen is when we get the urine culture, if it comes back negative, sometimes these people then get misdiagnosed as having a bad case of overactive bladder. But I think the key thing is that overactive bladder is not painful. It's just frequency. So if there's pain and the urine is negative, we would recommend that everybody be evaluated and considered as that they might have interstitial cystitis, painful bladder syndrome.
So this takes a while to diagnose, but I saw from the statistics of the disease. We're talking, by the way, with Dr. Robert J. Evans, who's a physician in the urology department, an associate professor of urology at Wake Forest. And you can see him on the web at wakeforest.edu/urology. And we're talking about interstitial cystitis, or what used to be called interstitial cystitis. ICHealth.org is one of the websites for this specifically, or what is now called painful bladder syndrome. So they've got frequency, and they need to urinate frequently because the urine in the bladder, there's a desire, if you will, of the bladder to get rid of it because it's so painful. And they have what we call a sterile urine or no bacteria in the urine. You then go to the step of how do you treat this then?
Well, you know, traditionally in the past, everybody would go to the operating room and undergo a cystoscopic examination where we look in their bladder and look for certain findings. But the current American Urologic Association guidelines feel that if patients have urgency, frequency, and pain of at least 6 months duration with no evidence of infection or other cause such as cancer in their bladder or something like that, then you can make the diagnosis strictly on clinical grounds. And we have certain questionnaires that we use to help us guide us. But once we find that, our goal is to try to get their pain under control as quickly as possible. And we will do that by initiating both medications by mouth and instillations of agents into the bladder, which will anesthetize the bladder and also try to recreate the abnormal bladder lining layer, which we think is where the problem comes from. The theory is that these folks, for unknown reasons, have a defect in the protective coating of their bladder, which is designed
to protect. So let's go over that. In your bladder, you have more than one layer of tissue.
Right.
And the coating, much like a coating in your stomach lining, is composed of what for the bladder normally?
Yeah, the bladder lining layer is a mucus-like layer that's secreted by that innermost layer of cells, which are called umbrella cells. Well, those cells secrete a mucus-like layer, which is called the GAG layer. That's a short term for glycosaminoglycan. But just think of it as mucus. It's like a thin mucus coating. But we know that urine is very acidic, and that acid in the urine really will burn, and it feels very toxic to tissue. So the protective coating, if it breaks down, the acid will then leak into the interstitial space, and that's where that interstitial cystitis comes from, and that's where the pain comes from, because acid's going where it's not supposed to go.
And now, so you try and get the acid out. What about just taking a lot of alkaline water or alkaline fluids? Will that help neutralize it or decrease it, or does that not work very well?
You know, it doesn't work consistently, but we do find that patients who keep well hydrated do a little bit better, because a more dilute urine just feels a little less toxic to the bladder wall than very dark concentrated urine. So one of the things we encourage people to do is actually increase their fluid intake, because it'll decrease the pain a little bit, whereas they just often cut way back on their fluids because they're so tired of the frequency. But usually if we can get the pain better, the frequency will begin to decrease.
So it's a paradoxic decrease. We're going to talk about foods people should avoid and other treatments when we continue this with Dr. Robert J. Evans. He's a associate professor of urology at Wake Forest Baptist Hospital in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And his website is wakeforest.edu/urology. We've been talking about, and we will continue talking about, the treatment for painful bladder syndrome, which is a syndrome where your bladder doesn't like urine when it comes in contact with it, but doesn't have an acute infection. And we've learned so far that there are treatments that are oral and treatments that are direct installation of stuff into your bladder. We're going to continue about what you can do with changing food and changing water yourself and other things. We'll be right back on You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio M. We'll be right back.
www.theownersmanualradioshow.com.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show with Michael Roizen, MD. Here's Dr. Mike.
And this is Dr. Mike. You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show on Radio MD, where the call letters mean, of course, that you should stay well, and we hope you do. One of the ways you stay well is by listening to this program, You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show, with me, Dr. Mike Roizen, because we aim to give you enough information so you can take control of your health, so you can live at the top of your curve. That's taking control of your genes, because remember, all genes do is make proteins or watch other genes, and which ones of yours are on, you have enormous power over. We're talking with someone who will give you power over bladder problems. You may have, or a friend may have, and we'll find out how common it is and then what you can do. Painful bladder syndrome is what we're talking about, and you can find more about it at ichealth.org. IC for interstitial cystitis. You don't have to remember or know how to spell it. IC, no periods there, health.org. And we're talking with Dr. Robert J. Evans of the Urology Department at Wake Forest University. It is wakeforest.edu. And Robert J. Evans is our guest. By the way, in the second hour, we're going to talk about beets and borscht and them. That is beet juice, a quart a day, improving your nitric oxide and letting you have more exercise longer. That is increasing your endurance and increasing the ability of your arteries to dilate and to provide you with energy and stamina. But right now, Robert J. Evans. Dr. Evans, what are the common over-the-counter treatments that make painful bladder syndrome less painful?
Well, some of the simplest things that patients can do to help themselves are to improve their diet. There are certain things on the so-called interstitial cystitis diet that we would like them to eliminate, and that's primarily caffeine, alcohol, carbonated drinks, tea, anything that's very acidic, so very spicy foods are a problem, citrus fruits are a problem, tomatoes are a problem. In essence, anything that the body senses being somewhat acidic will make a difference. And then there is an over-the-counter product that we often use called Preleve, which, if taken with food, will decrease the acidity a little bit. In essence, it lets them cheat a little bit on the diet, because the diet can be awfully restrictive since so many fruits are eliminated because of their acid nature. So we like to try, as they get a little better, to give them a chance to cheat on that diet a little bit. It makes it a little bit easier to tolerate.
So we've gone over some food, and we've gone over making sure you keep drinking. What else is there that really makes a huge difference in this?
Well, if somebody does not respond to dietary manipulations and also stress management, because we know that stress, like it does in so many other illnesses, plays a big role here. If we're ready to move on to medications, there are several medications that are recommended in the American Urologic Association guidelines. The most important ones are Elmeron, which is a drug that can be taken by mouth to coat the bladder. And unfortunately, it takes a long time for that to work. We also use antihistamines because, in a way, this is almost like having an allergic reaction against your own urine internally. So antihistamines play a big role. And then certain antidepressants, when taken in very low doses, can help decrease pain and improve the ability to control urination, particularly at night. So those are the kind of medications that we like to do. But in a way, one of the more important things we try to accomplish with patients is to empower them so that they can treat themselves with these bladder installations, because there's almost immediate relief of their pain. And it can last for many hours if they can accomplish that.
So they learn how to catheterize themselves, or to put a small tube, especially women. This is probably easier in women than men. Is that right?
You know, for women, it's really very easy, and we've taught hundreds and hundreds of women how to do this. You know, we'll often let them try a treatment or two in the office to make sure that they like it. And, you know, certainly if they want to come into the office, they're welcome to do so. But You know, the idea that they might have the ability to control their pain any hour of the day or night by giving themselves an insulation is something that we think is terrific because it lets them take control of this disease instead of letting it control them.
And then you were saying there was something else. Once the instillation, what are the drugs, local anesthetics that they instill, or are they contained?
Yeah, it's a combination. We use a buffered lidocaine mixture because lidocaine or novocaine, zolocaine, all basically the same thing. If it's not buffered correctly to make the pH correct, it doesn't penetrate the wall of the bladder very well. And it may burn a little bit, but a buffered lidocaine is very well tolerated. And then to that, we put heparin. Now, most everybody knows about heparin, and it's used as a blood thinner. But heparin is almost identical in its construction to the natural lining layer of the bladder. So the introduction of heparin into the bladder helps to recoat that bladder. And so it's not just numbing up the bladder, but it's actually helping it to heal. So we think over time these patients' bladders actually get better and start to work more normally again.
So this is actually going to, if you will, the actual, I guess you'd call it the actual cause of the problem, which is the erosion of that heparin glycoprotein layer and giving them more.
Exactly. We believe that the GAG layer, the glycosaminoglycan layer deficit, is the key. And this is the most effective way to try and replace, replenish, and heal that area. And we think then that, over time they can use the insulations less and less and maybe just transition over to simple medications for protection. And this really is a fantastic way to allow the patient to really treat the disease and not just treat the symptoms. So we want to try to make the bladder better, not simply mask it with an analgesic.
So for more information, I'm going to refer them to your website, which is, there are two websites you've told me about. One is wakeforest.edu, wakeforest.edu/urology, EDU for education. And the other is IC Health, I as in interstitial, C as in cystitis, but you don't have to know how to spell those, ichealth.org. We've been talking with Dr. Robert J. Evans, Associate Professor of Urology at Wake Forest Baptist Health in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, not too far from where my daughter works and lives in Durham at Duke. So, Dr. Evans, thanks very much for spending time with us and for educating us all. And remember, you can always go to hear a replay of this to radiomd.com. Go to the archives of You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show. Look for today's date, and you'll find this show, or look for Dr. Evans' name, and you'll find this show. We'll be right back after the break. We're going to talk about beet juice and its ability to decrease aging.